well, it held report backs last fall and started meeting and having regular meetings around January, but it was too cold for me to leave the house, so I couldn't go then. Mm-hmm. So today I'm tabling for the Anarchist People of Color crew, mm-hmm. and it's been a pretty good experience so far. It's been, people have been more or less very happy to see us at the book fair. We had one person come up and give us the usual line about reverse racism regarding the screening this evening, saying, they tried to trick me, supposedly. Uh-huh. What if I say this to you? If people of color get together and have a people of color only event, isn't that racist? I said, no. Mm-hmm. But what if white people got together and had a white-only event? Would that be racist? I was like, yes. See, it's that simple. You know, mm-hmm. people of color only, it's about creating our safe spaces mm-hmm. and being able to talk freely about the issues that concern us without having to go over the 101s of every term that comes out of our mouth, without having to justify our ideas, and being able to let loose our emotions also, and most importantly, which is what can't happen in a mixed environment. I mean, people have absolutely no qualms accepting women-only spaces. People have absolutely no qualms with a gay and lesbian center. But people of color, all on their own? Mm-hmm. And like a friend of mine said once, she said, the issue isn't about people of color being together. The issue is not having any white people to moderate their conversation, you know? And I think that's what really pisses people off. I mean, there's the first reaction, gut reaction of white entitlement, mm-hmm. of not being allowed to enter a space. And, you know, they own the planet. How come they can't come into the space? And the second reaction is that, well, you know, we can't let all these Negroes sit and say whatever, you know? So... But aside from that, you know, it's been mostly positive responses,
Yeah, and a lot's been said lately about the oppositional force APOC can have precisely because it's united by people of all different kinds of colors. And, you know, this is especially important given the history of anarchism and the fact that it hasn't had enough people of color representing their communities. We're joined today also by Dwight. Dwight, maybe you can say a little bit about where you're from and what you're doing here.
Yeah, sure. I guess I'm from New York City, and I'm here, you know, at the Anarchist Book Fair, because I'm an anarchist person of color, right?
Dwight, maybe you can move a bit closer to the mic. Thanks.
So, but in terms of talking about people of color and representation in a specifically anarchist milieu. I mean, it seems to me like people of color have, in many ways, often always been very anarchist. And the term anarchist really only arose in the 19th century to sort of describe something that it seems like to me was already happening, which is, you know, decentralized, autonomous communities working in ways that weren't capitalist and figuring out, you know, how to go about survival on their own terms. So perhaps, you know, people of color haven't been represented in terms of particularly anarchist kind of a way, but it seems to me as though people of color have been doing things that were anarchistic since the dawn of time, exactly. So perhaps it may be the case that, you know, people of color weren't specifically related to anarchism as, you know, in the term, but people of color have always been very anarchistic, it seems to me.
If anarchism is supposed to be a sustainable way of life and not just sort of a flash in the pan, one of the things it probably is going to have to do is associate it with things which are, you know, much broader than anarchism, you know, narrowly defined. In your experiences, what are some of the other things outside of anarchism, you know, in your communities which you found are like, make good relations or good links to this whole idea of APOC?
Well, exactly like Dwight was saying, he was saying that our histories as people of color is almost by definition anarchist. Mm-hmm. And that was like, you notice in most, for example, for the continent of Africa, it took a while to colonize because we did not have, for the most part, centralized states. And so whitey would come in, negotiate land takeover with this one dude, and realized, like, two blocks over, well, you didn't talk to us. They said, okay, but we're going to kick your ass. And so that was how it worked for us for the longest of times. And a part of our job as anarchists of color is trying to retrieve that history and bring it to light. Because for the most part of the 20th century, liberation struggles of people of color have been along the status model, you know, following nationalism, you know, national independence, which totally makes sense because when you're at that level, you first want to define yourself as an independent institution, as an independent nation against your oppressor. But we inherited lots of evil ways of doing things, you know, representative democracy, etc. and whatnot. And so part of our responsibility as anarchist people of color is to unearth those histories that have been lost, that have been rejected for the most part. And not even such ancient history. I was reading a book very recently on peasant rebellion in the Caribbean, in Jamaica and Haiti. And in Haiti, there's two worlds. There's the official, the real world, quote unquote. That's the world of the cities, and the backwaters rural world, where people consider it just chaos. But looking at the institutions that peasants created to govern themselves, to manage their wealth, to create production, to manage all of that, they were inherently democratic institutions that were anarchist to the extent in that they were represented local governing of resources and of traditions. And it was like that across the nation. But people from, like, educated people from the cities, people from the West would come in and just not see these institutions because they didn't look like Western institutions and just think, well, there was no organizations amongst peasants. But what we have was, like, traditional ways of working the land, for example, combit, which is across the Americas. You find this people coming to help each other work the land, till the land, and then going over to someone else's house, and people would just arrange it amongst themselves, decide democratically amongst themselves who would get their land worked on next, etc. and whatnot. There was savings institutions that exist in Africa, like Tontin, that exists up until today, that is repeated all across the Caribbean and the Americas, where usually it was mostly women would come together, like each person would put like a dollar in the pot, and every week someone gets the whole pot. You know, that's the way we used to do savings. That's the way lots of black people still do savings, but it's not acknowledged as a real institution because it's not at the Royal Bank. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have a debit card, so it doesn't really exist. And however, what's really interesting is that when Western society starts to recognize these ways of doing, they immediately start to try to co-opt them. And for example, that the example of the tontine I just gave you, Coop des Jardins here in Quebec, is trying to cannibalize it. They're going to Africa and they're trying to recuperate all the tontines and turn them into Western-style banks. So of course, then they control the money and, you know, they basically take away our wealth from us, from the women, which is what they're used to doing. And yeah, so a part of our responsibility is finding those institutions and sharing them with our communities and reinforcing them and liberating them from oppression.
And how can AIPOC help in that struggle to oppose, you know, the sort of takeover of these ancient traditional ways of, you know, distributing wealth amongst the people within that community?
Well, I think AIPOC serves as a poll, first of all, for people who have this information to share it amongst ourselves and mm-hmm. find ways to share it with our communities. It serves as a poll for people to stop feeling isolated, because you come to a thing like the Anarchist Book Fair. Like, I've known the organizers since the beginning. Like, I've known, like, at least half of the organizing crew since the beginning has been people of color, but you don't see that in the event, right? Because it's, I think, at least 99% white. And so there's a certain nice sense of isolation you can feel if you just come in and don't know who to call, you know? And AIPOC serves as first a place for like minds to meet up together and just, like, get rid of the isolation. I think that's the first step. And then, well, to me, the purpose aside from like organizing events as an anarchist people of color crew, my personal take on things is that I'm more useful if I corrupt mainstream people of color organizations, especially here in Montreal, where they can be so back-ass words, you know, where they have really dried up ways of seeing things, where they become really, really dependent on government funding, on grants, on top-down decision-making, on really interventionist ways of looking at things. I mean, there's almost no advocacy left in our organizations. And so I think our responsibilities is, once we find that safe cocoon that APOC represents, is to use APOC as a springboard to go infect our communities, basically.
And exactly, what are the messages which are important to be getting out? What are the messages which we need to infect the larger community with? Maybe you can say a little bit about, you know, sort of APOC in New York, and because I'm guessing it's, you know, slightly different set of communities there, different governmental structure, different challenges. Say what you've observed here as well, Dwight.
Well, I really haven't, you know, seen very much here in Canada yet, so I don't really feel comfortable, you know, talking about.
Fair enough.
Because I haven't, you know, I've been at the Anarchist Book Fair all day. That's practically all I've seen of Canada. But what I could talk about is what people in New York right now, APOC folks, are starting to think about in terms of what they want to do to work with the community. Right now, APOC folks and Critical Resistance, which is an organization that's focused on the abolition of prisons, are working together on what we're calling a harm-free zone. So this all came out of basically back in November, right before the FTAA, APOC and Critical Resistance had a benefit for APOC folks going down to the FTAA and people who had, you know, lost money on the Detroit trip for the Detroit conference. And what happened at that benefit was, you know, truly shocking, truly disgusting, and really, really terrible. Basically, it's just a party with a bunch of people at the Critical Resistance space, which is in Brooklyn. And they rent the space. It's their own space. They're cool with all their neighbors. And what ended up happening was, I think, like something like 25 cop cars came into the party, pepper sprayed a bunch of people, beat a bunch of people, and arrested like 8 individuals. And so, you know, trying to deal with that was really difficult. And then trying to think about the bigger picture was also, you know, a big challenge for people. And so people start to think in terms of, well, we think it would be really important, like, you know, in people of color communities, and in particular the community in Brooklyn where the Critical Resistance office is, that people work on, you know, solving problems without having to call the police, because, you know, the police don't solve problems in people of color communities. They only make them worse, right? So people were thinking, well, how can we go about doing this? So this idea of having a 77th free zone arose because the precinct that, you know, attacked the APOC party was the 77th precinct in Brooklyn. And, you know, people discussed it and they talked about it. And then we thought, well, even though we know that, you know, police brutality is a huge problem in this community, we're still sort of imposing our own views on the community by just defining it only as a 77th free zone. Why not think even larger, and why not think about a harm-free zone? So this summer, what people are going to be doing is going around in this particular community in Brooklyn, and hopefully, you know, we'll be able to create some kind of a model that can be replicated in other communities, in other, like, you know, similar communities. Going around talking to people, like, what are your harms? You know, how does domestic violence affect you? How do drugs in the neighborhood affect you? Like, how does police brutality affect you? And then, you know, gathering that information, trying to figure out where the consensus lies, and then going about ways to facilitate autonomy in dealing with these issues. So, like, how can we, for example, for the, you know, police brutality example, how can we go about facilitating community problem solving? And we don't just want to go in there and be like, we're going to make some autonomy for people, but we want to go in there and be like, how can we be better facilitators for what we feel like is really important to this community? And so first off, we'd want to identify, like, organic problem solvers, the people who are already on the block, like, trying to deal with issues when they arise, and then helping them by doing workshops with them, working on, like, you know, different problem solving techniques, different ways of mediation, all these kinds of things that can make them even better problem solvers. And then go about, like, the task of being like, yeah, you know, there's a problem. Well, yeah, people in the community aren't going to call the police because, first off, they already know the police aren't going to help them. And second off, they have other alternatives. And to me, that kind of seems like, you know, really, that's like really being a Zapatista in Brooklyn in a certain sense. It's about going in there, listening to what people need, and then going about helping to facilitate, you know, autonomy from the state. And so that's what people are doing in Brooklyn right now, and at the, you know, the APOC, you know, New York City crew. So, yeah.
And do we have the same sort of beautiful sentiment of direct representation happening here in Montreal? Do we have, like, the same sort of gradual, like, outreach to members of the community such that, you know, they can basically step up to the mic and express in their own words and in their own terms, like, how they see the world, what their trials and tribulations are on an everyday basis?
Well, it's definitely something that I am going to put on the table. I myself, over the last couple of years, have been very involved in various student activism groups, and I've beaten myself over and over the head, like, time and time again, because it's been a bit of a safe place for me to hide, and that I'm not out there, like, in the community, in the streets, at the community events. And I think this is definitely a chance that we should grab. It's the summer, it's hot, we should be outside anyhow, you know? And be at Calle Fiesta, be at the community fairs, be at the stuff that, you know, is sometimes really, really cheesy, but because you're not there, people don't hear anything else. And people are starving for this type of information. People don't believe in the system. Listen, we're people of color. You know, we've been living through this shit for the last 500 years. We know it's all bullshit. You know, we know it's all bullshit. And so it's not that hard for you to find folks who intuitively agree with what most of these concepts. They just don't have the words that go along with it. And they just don't identify with what anarchism looks like. I mean, if they were to look here, of course they wouldn't identify with it, you know? So it's a matter of just being out there. And I think that's definitely something that we have to model, the harm-free zone, especially these days, since the police in Montreal are taking it upon themselves to be, like, as brutal as they possibly can, you know? And so, yeah, I think it's about time. People are starting to get... People have been mobilizing against police brutality in the city for the last 30 years, and I think people have reached the exhaustion point that nothing has changed and things are getting worse. And I think they'll be really open to having a different tack on how to deal with this issue. So yeah, we'll be following the harm-free zone idea very closely.
Fantastic. Yeah, and I definitely know that people in New York would really be interested on ways of working, you know, not just in the community that we're working in right now, but also in other people of color communities. And what we really want to do is not just create this sort of, you know, community autonomy in the neighborhood in Brooklyn that we're working in, but yeah, create a model that can be replicated and that can be tried out in other places. So yeah, I know that I'd definitely be really interested in working on, like, Montreal issues and issues, you know, everywhere, really. So that'd be fantastic. We could talk about this.
I think we're actually coming to the end of this panel, but the next panel coming up is going to be an open mic, so this might be a good opportunity to throw the discussion open to a few other people who might have a couple of things to say about their involvement with anarchism in the city of Montreal, about their affiliation with people of color. We can also just end on that, like, just one other point is talk a little bit what... you know, people of color, like, why they might be attracted to anarchism, you know, the positions, the traditions. What about anarchism? In what sense can it begin to relate to peoples of color and, you know, exactly, you know, sort of change the direction and see, like, what anarchism can do for peoples of color? Like, what are some of the important things you think anarchism still might have to say to address those concerns?
Well, I can think about ways that, you know... that anarchists who aren't people of color can help, you know, people of color anarchists. One of those things is, it seems to me like, yeah, most anarchists, you know, really want to work for a world that is colorblind. And I understand that. I can, you know, agree. I think that, you know, we should be wanting to work to, you know, a world that's beyond race, right? But the trouble comes into play when they feel like being beyond race is just, you know, putting the blinders on to the fact that, you know, we exist and we live in a racist structure. You know, I can put the, I can say, well, you know, I'm beyond race today, so I'm just not going to deal with it. But guess what? You know, the state's still dealing with me, you know, in the same way. All these sort of, you know, structures are still dealing with me in the same way. And really the only people that benefit from, you know, it's just, it's leaving, you know, whiteness as the privileged center. And we're still, we haven't done anything. Like, in terms of, like, we might all, like, kind of agree that what we want to do is, like, smash the state, right? Like, we want to deal with the state, and we want to abolish the state. We want to get out of that model, right? But the way to do that isn't by putting the blinders on and being like, well, the state doesn't exist. Because guess what? The state's still going to exist, and it's still going to, you know, it's still going to, you know, fuck with our lives on a day-to-day basis. So, in terms of what white folks or, you know, people who aren't people of color can do to support people of color is understand that what we need is to have our own space to deal with our own issues and to be able to really, you know, strategize and theorize and talk to one another about issues that, you know, only we can intimately understand. And so when people have this sort of knee-jerk reaction that, well, anarchist people of color, what they're doing is, you know, it's really, you know, it's reactionary or something, or what they're doing is creating these spaces that we can't be a part of. I think
it's apartheid. It's apartheid.
Right, right. What they need to understand is that we still have to confront these structures of racism, and to do that, we might have to, yeah, recognize that although race isn't a scientific category as such, it's still very much a social and political category that affects our lives. So I think that's one way that, like, you know, the broader anarchist, you know, anarchist community can begin to start helping people of color and begin to really start getting to what will bring us beyond race and what will bring us beyond, you know, these, you know, sort of arbitrary, you know, things that came along very much with capitalism and right, imperialism, right, and colonialism.
Yeah, and I think the founding elements of nationalism in Europe, people have a tendency to forget. Well, it's not an accident, but it's a purposeful sleight of hand that in the history books they talk about the creation of the nations and liberal democracy and whatnot. And they always seem to forget to mention that at the same time that they were defining the rights of the citizen, the reason why they were defining it in such detail is because they were actually defining who is not a citizen. They were defining the rights of white rich men because there were women and people of color to exploit. So at the same time that they were writing these declarations of independence and the rights of a citizen and whatnot, they were embarking on imperialist conquering of people of color. So it's no contradiction. A citizen, by definition, is a rich white male, and every attempt to change that definition has changed the situation a little bit, but the base of the matter stays the same, which is why there are limits to, like, civil rights movements, which is why there are limits to the feminist movement, because they're trying to reform something. It's kind of like saying, well, I have a block of butter, I'm going to try to turn it into soy. It's not going to work, okay? It's the same thing. By definition, Western nationalism is anti-people of color, is anti-women. Mm-hmm. And, you know, once you get that, once you understand that, it's obvious why anarchism, like the abolition of these ideas of capitalist organization, appeals to people of color, because it's the exact antidote to the capitalist disease.
Has there been a lot of support from women's groups for, you know, anarchist peoples of color, given the fact that they're both marginalized, maybe in the same ways, maybe not in the same ways, by these institutions of power, the state, the government?
No, well, you know, most mainstream women's groups don't like people of color organizing on their own. I was part of the Fire Women of Color Collective for a long time, and we'd get that ish from the white feminists, you know. Why women of color only, yada, yada, yada. I mean, it's not because they're women that they're any much more allies, you know?
Yeah, I would probably agree, and I would say that it seems to me like a lot of women of color organizations and stuff have been very, very sort of, very supportive, at least, you know, from where I'm at. Like, mm-hmm. groups like Sister Fire in Brooklyn and other groups like that have been very supportive and really hear that because, yeah, they probably are trying to work towards the end of the nation state as such. And so,
we just don't say that.
Yeah.
We don't put it on our grant requests.
Right, exactly.
But it's there. between the lines.
Yeah.